However, it's time that we left this survey and got on with the subject of tonight's lecture. That is to say, with the cosmic significance of the Bodhisattva ideal. Now, the subject matter tonight falls quite naturally into two main sections. First of all, we'll elucidate the Bodhisattva ideal itself, and after that, we shall try to explore its cosmic significance. This, I hope, will throw some light on the general nature of the Mahayana and also reveal something of the cosmic significance of the evolutionary process itself. First of all, then, the Bodhisattva ideal. Some of you know that last winter, in this very place, we devoted a whole course, a whole series of lectures, to this particular subject. We had 8 lectures on aspects of the Bodhisattva ideal. And we haven't left that subject behind. In the course of the summer, the tapes of these lectures were played, and not only played, but discussed in some detail every alternate Friday evening. And it's hoped that we'll be able to adopt, to follow the same procedure with this series as well. Now, at this point, in the interest of thoroughness, I ought really to give a summary of those 8 lectures. This would give us a fairly good idea of the general nature of the Bodhisattva ideal. But such a summary is out of the question because it would take far too long. But I hope, nevertheless, to be able to cover some at least of the ground covered last winter in those lectures, which I believe quite a number of you did attend. Those who did attend may remember that as we proceeded on our way, week by week, we found again and again, more and more definitely, that there was one aspect of the subject which was assuming more and more importance. We came back to it again and again. We insisted upon it again and again. We saw it rising before us, as it were, again and again. And this was the subject of the bodhicitta, or the will to enlightenment. And as we proceeded on our way, as we proceeded with the course, we found that all other aspects of the Bodhisattva ideal tended to group themselves, to arrange themselves, even organize themselves around this one. It was rather like, we saw, a number of foothills gathered around some great central mountain peak. Now, we dealt with the subject of the bodhicitta, of the will to enlightenment proper, in the second lecture in that series, which was entitled The Awakening of the Bodhi Heart. This was preceded by a lecture on the origin and development of the Bodhisattva ideal, and followed by another on the Bodhisattva vow. So the points I'm going to make, the ground I'm going to cover tonight, are connected, one might say, or derived from, mainly, these 3 lectures. And for a more detailed explanation of the Bodhisattva ideal, I must refer you to them. They are, of course, available on tape, and I hope also to be able to write them out in book form someday. Now, the Bodhisattva, to begin with, is the ideal Buddhist. That is to say, the Bodhisattva is a being sattva, who lives for the sake of spiritual enlightenment, bodhi. So the bodhisattva ideal is in general nothing other than a statement of the Buddhist ideal itself, the ideal of the attainment of enlightenment. In other words, the ideal of what we've been describing in these lectures of the higher evolution, of evolution from a state of unenlightened to a state of enlightened humanity. But it's even more than that. The bodhisattva is further defined as one who seeks to gain enlightenment not just for his own sake only, not just for the sake of his own individual emancipation from suffering, from ignorance, from the wheel of life, but who seeks to gain it for the sake of all sentient beings. So this is the full definition, a full description, if you like, of the word or the idea of bodhisattva, going far beyond the literal meaning of the term. One who seeks to gain enlightenment, not for his own sake only, but for the sake of all sentient beings. Now the question arises, why the amplification? Why not just say that the bodhisattva is one who seeks to gain enlightenment and leave it at that? Why add that particular rider, for the sake of all sentient beings? To understand this, we have to go back to the beginning, back to the beginnings of Buddhism. The Buddha, we know, lived and taught for some 45 years, and then he passed away. And this passing away is traditionally known as the parinirvana, the attainment of supreme nirvana, the ultimate peace, the ultimate rest, a way beyond conditioned things, eternal and complete and self-illuminating. And after the Buddha's parinirvana, there arose or there developed somehow among his disciples two groups, two parties, or two wings, if you like, or two tendencies. One group, one party, was on the whole quite satisfied with the Buddha's verbal teaching. They were deeply interested in the different doctrinal formulations of the teaching, interested in the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path, the Seven Stages of Purification, the Five Skandhas, the 12 dhatus, the 12 nidanas, and so on. They concentrated more on the verbal teaching, were more interested in that, and in fact came to regard this, the verbal teaching of the Buddha, the doctrinal teaching of the Buddha, as being Buddhism, the whole of Buddhism in fact. But the other party was not quite satisfied with this. They, of course, accepted the Buddha's verbal teaching. They accepted all the doctrinal formulations, the Eightfold Path, the Four Noble Truths, and so on. But they maintained that Buddhism was something else, something more also. They maintained that above and beyond the teaching, or if you like, behind the verbal teaching, the actual life and personality, to use a much abused term, an example of the Buddha, had also to be taken into consideration. They said, in effect, that what the Buddha himself was as a man, as an enlightened being, what the Buddha himself was and what he did was at least as important as what he said. The verbal teaching, the doctrinal teaching, gave expression to the Buddha's wisdom. But his life, his person, his activity gave expression to his love, to his compassion. And this other party, this second party, held that Buddhism comprises both of these together. And it maintained that both of these had to be taken into consideration in the formulation of the spiritual ideal. And they therefore said that the bodhisattva seeks to gain enlightenment. Yes, here they agree with everybody else. This gives expression to the wisdom aspect of Buddhism. But they also went on to say, in addition, that he seeks to gain enlightenment for the benefit, for the sake of all sentient beings. And this gives expression to the compassion aspect of Buddhism. So in this way we see that the bodhisattva ideal is a balanced ideal. It derives its inspiration not only from what the Buddha said, the teaching, but also from what the Buddha was and what he did, his person and his example. In other words, the bodhisattva ideal incorporates both wisdom and compassion.